This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Welcome to episode 7 of Musings with Greek 365, created by Upper Division undergraduate students taught by Deborah Beck. My name is Trey Timpson, an undergraduate student at the University of Texas at Austin. Today we will be talking about the myth of Niobe presented by Achilles, found in Book 24 of the Iliad, lines 602 through 620. Through the episode, I want to explore this peculiar passage and talk about the ways in which it stands out from the rest of the poem. I will be talking about my own observations, as well as those of my classmates, and how the passage has already been analyzed by previous scholars. This scene lies in the final book of the Iliad, and follows Priam's embassy to Achilles, where the former beseeches the hero to release the body of his son, appealing to the powerful passion Achilles feels for his own father. The two partake in their fair share of grieving, Priam for his beloved son, and Achilles for his father and his equally beloved companion, Patroclus. After the mourning, Achilles prepares the body of Hector for ransom and then turns his attention back to his guests. This is where Achilles uses the story of Niobe to convey to Priam the importance of remembering to eat while in despair. In the popular story, as Achilles tells it, Niobe uses her 12 children to liken herself to Leto, the mother of Apollo and Artemis, as she had borne many times the children that Leto had. In response to this hubris, Artemis and Apollo killed all her children and left them lying unburied for 9 days before the Olympians buried them, as Zeus had turned the people into stone. Niobe herself is said to remain petrified on Mount Sipylus, where she mourns eternally for her fate. What first struck me as odd, as well as my fellow classmates, was the rather convoluted way the story expresses the simple idea that they should eat. Achilles is drawing a tangential conclusion from a story that appears to be about the dangers of comparing oneself to a god. There is clearly some poetic reason to why Achilles chose such an intense story to achieve such a neutral purpose. The connection that seems obvious is that of Priam to Niobe. Priam has just lost a great number of children, just like her, and is in a state of intense grieving. However, while this connection clearly exists, the purpose of Achilles is less apparent. What is he hoping to convey by putting Priam into this myth? It could be that Achilles is trying to criticize the king by comparing him to Niobe, who was clearly guilty of the crime of hubris. The evidence for this isn't directly stated in the Iliad, but in class we made some speculations. The most prominent was the comparison of Priam and Thetis. Priam produced a son nearly as strong and beloved of the gods as Thetis, who is herself a goddess. The great crime of Niobe was to isasketo herself to Leto, a word that appears only here in all of Homer. It literally means to make oneself equal. And through Hector, Priam came close to equivalating himself to Thetis. But, just as with Niobe, the two are not actually equal, as the 12 children of Niobe were no match for Leto's 2, the child of Priam was not able to withstand the child of a goddess. However, the reason for Achilles criticizing Priam in this way, and at this time, is not clear. The argument for this being the intention of Achilles is far from airtight, but it is still interesting to think about nonetheless. In the end, the only thing we can say for certain is that Achilles is trying to convey the idea that even if one has lost many children, they should still remember to eat in their mourning, an idea certainly applicable to Priam. Now, the most controversial question about this section is whether or not it even belongs in the Iliad. After all, it is a rather strange telling of the story. Many key details are left out, and somebody unfamiliar with the story would have a harder time understanding it. Why were the people turned to stone by Zeus? That is seemingly unrelated to the deaths of Niobe's children, and merely serves to allow for them to remain unburied, with no explanation given. One possibility is simply that the audience was already familiar with the story, so there was no use in repeating the details that weren't important to the message Achilles was trying to convey. However, there are other problems with the story that complicate this assumption. The problem of the Niobe passage has been debated about since classical Greece, and scholars today are still unable to come to a conclusion. Some think that the story is a later addition to the text, while others reject this claim. Neither side seems to have a smoking gun on the issue, but the fact that it is so hotly debated shows that there is something different about it. There are several plot holes, for lack of a better word, that make the story problematic. In the story, both Niobe and the people are turned to stone, and yet if Niobe was stone, then how would she be able to eat? And if she wasn't turned to stone, then why did she not bury her children immediately? Going by the logic of this story, Niobe had to have been turned to stone separately from the unexplained petrification of the people, leaving many unanswered questions and contradictions. I looked to an article about this section, by Thomas Pierce, to try and find a solution. He accepted the validity of the passage, and tried to solve the contradiction by claiming that Homer made up the part about eating to serve the needs of the poem. The class and I didn't find this interpretation very convincing, as it was more speculation than provable fact, and seemed to rely on the assumption that the poem was masterminded by the one poet, Homer, and not by centuries of oral tradition. The idea that we entertained instead was that this section could have been the result of several different versions of the Niobe story represented in epic poetry. We know that a statue on Mount Sipylus was thought to be the petrified Niobe, so perhaps a version of the story inspired by that and a version that involved her eating while mourning came together, resulting in an inconsistent narrative. This would explain why pieces of the story are either left out or don't fit together. This hypothesis is no more supported by facts than Pierce's, but I think it is worthy to think about all the same. After all, audiences listening to the poem performed would not be analyzing every single line the way ancient and modern scholars have, and it is not unreasonable to think that these contradictions would pass over the heads of the listeners. This concludes our discussion of the Niobe myth. In summary, I don't believe we are able to say much for certain about the intentions of the author or how it came to be in the poem, but I hope I have provided some interesting ways of thinking about it. I prefer the theory that the contradictions represent various Niobe myths being blended together, but I'm more than willing to accept a more persuasive argument. Feel free to comment if you have any ideas of your own. For the last part of my episode, I would like to talk about the use of setos in this section. This word drew my eye because I knew it specifically meant grain-based food. From the courses I have taken on Greek history, I have heard many times about the prevalence of meat in the diet of Homeric heroes. Curious about this, I decided to investigate to see if the use of setos had any special meaning. I found that setos appears 15 times in the Iliad, spread across 5 books. The first 2 times are in Book 8, lines 507 and 547. These 2 references are very close together and are both used in the same formula. This formula is used for the preparation of feasts and places setos next to sheep and wine. There is another case of identical formula usage in Books 9 and 24, lines 216 and 625, respectively. They represent very similar circumstances. The closest companions of Achilles are setting setos on the table. In Book 9, it's Patroclus, and in Book 24, it is Automedon. It shows up another 3 times in Book 19, but it is represented the most by the 6 times in Book 24. This is due to the Niobe story, which holds a third of the overall uses in the Iliad, but one use is found outside of that passage. In line 129, Thetis asks her son how long he will grieve, not remembering his setos. This is the same idea expressed in the Niobe story, and even uses the same language. Thus, I would like to make a couple of speculations on the reason for this word showing up so rarely, but often enough to be significant. The first was brought up by Dr. Beck, and that is the feminine association of the word setos. In Book 24, the talk of remembering setos is connected to the women Thetis and Niobe, and could have a domestic role that is associated with women. Dr. Beck suggested this without any knowledge of scholarship on the subject, so this is more of a theory than a well-researched point. A second theory is that the word setos became a shorthand for food, or came to represent different ideas in different contexts. This can be shown by the prevalence of use in formulas. In one formula, it seems to represent specifically non-meat foods, but in another it seems to have a less defined meaning. In Book 24, Achilles seems to be using it to mean just food in general, as he proceeds to prepare meat for them. In the end, the sparse use of setos makes me believe that the poet refrained from using it in order to prioritize meat eating, but the commonality of the word in everyday speech would see it introduced into stock phrases that the poet would use as he needed. The prevalence of the word in Book 24 could be special to the context or indicate that the books of the Iliad had different composers with different diction. That, however, is a very tentative claim and too large a topic to discuss in this episode. This has been the extent of my musings on Book 24 of the Iliad. I learned a lot from my Teacher of the Day experience, including the value of open discussion, even after I've done so much thinking and researching on my own. No matter how much I prepare, I can't consider every angle on my own, and the conclusions reached by a brainstorming class can often sharpen the arguments that we use to answer these difficult questions. I hope that our efforts to understand this complex and moving piece of art have been enlightening for those listening, and inspires you all to digest the ideas that our class has proposed. Thank you all for listening. This has been Trey Timpson on Musings with Greek 365. I hope you have enjoyed the discussion, and I wish you all a wonderful day.